Welcome to Hope for the Caregiver here on American Family Radio. This is Peter Rosenberger, and this is the program for you as a family caregiver, for those of you who are willingly, knowingly, voluntarily, and probably without any kind of training, putting yourself between a chronically impaired loved one and something even worse. And you're absorbing that. You're paying for it physically, emotionally, financially, spiritually, professionally. How are you doing? How are you holding up? What's going on with you? These are the questions I ask. These are the questions we explore. And I'll tell you why. Because healthy caregivers make better caregivers. And if you're not healthy, and if nobody's checking on you, how is that going to work? What does that even look like going forward? This thing may stretch out for years, and in some cases, decades, and in some cases, a lifetime. So how do we help fellow caregivers stay strong and healthy while taking care of someone who is not? And I'm glad that you're with us to talk about that. PeterRosenberger.com. PeterRosenberger.com if you want to be a part of the program, if you want to find out more of what we're doing, if you want to share your story, if you want to find resources. And I have a caregiver 911 right there on the front page. It's a little blinking light. You can click on that and start there. If you don't know which end is up or which is frontwards, which is backwards, if you are disoriented, if you're frustrated, if you're overwhelmed, if you're discouraged, dismayed, mad, doesn't matter. Whatever's going on with you, if you don't know where to start, that's a good place to start. I've got a podcast episode. I've got things you can read. I got a video for you. There's so many things that I put out there for my fellow caregivers, things that I didn't have for the vast majority of my, in fact, the only reason I have it now is because I'm creating it. And I've been doing this four decades through a brutal medical nightmare that is getting ready to take extra innings here in a couple of weeks. We'll be heading back down to Denver from our home in Montana, where Gracie will undergo lifetime surgery number 87 and number 88 consecutively. So we've got a challenging couple of months ahead of us. She'll be in the hospital for a couple of months. So it's going to be a bit of a challenge, but here we are. And we're going to get through it, and we're going to grow and learn from it. But this is the path that she has to take. There's no other way. This was set for her back in the Reagan administration, through no fault of her own. She woke up, and this is the path that the surgeons at the time, the conventional wisdom, set for her to go down. And here we are. So you could fight against it, or you could just embrace it. This is what it is. We could accept it. And by the way, I've got a very good interview that I'll be featuring later on in the program of something I did earlier this week with a lady. And she said something I really resonated with, a term she used: massive acceptance, radical presence. Massive acceptance, radical presence. Can we have massive acceptance that this is happening to us? This is happening to our loved one. And then be present in the moment. And that is the whole thrust of everything I do. Now, I'm going to do something here in just a few minutes of this opening monologue that I don't normally do. But I'm going to do it because it's such an object lesson. Why do I do this program? Why do I do all these things? Well, we've been watching this play out on a world stage with our own country of what happens when a caregiver is not in a good place. And that is the case with Joe Biden. I don't normally step into politics. I really try to stay away from that on a regular basis. That's not the thrust of this show. And you may love Joe Biden and you may hate Donald Trump or vice versa. Put all that in a box for right now. The man is clearly impaired. Clearly impaired. And it was lied about, hidden, covered up, compensated for, and the American people and the world was deceived on just how impaired this man was. Now, I personally don't know that Joe Biden was ever really sharp on a good day, but that's neither here nor there. He's not having good days, and we know that. And here we are right here at the end of his administration, and it is alarming on what the media and the government and the inside circle of the Biden administration and his family covered up. And this is the issue with family caregivers. They enable, they cover up, they compensate, they lie. All these kinds of things when we get disoriented for whatever reason. I wrote an article about this a while back. I think it was in the Washington Times, maybe American Spectator. But I refer to Jill Biden as the enabler in chief. And those are strong words. And I'm not saying that politically. I'm saying that as a caregiver. That a long time ago, she should have walked up and said, "We're done," and take him out of the game. How many of you all have somebody in your life who shows the same amount of impairment issues and characteristics that Joe Biden does? And would you let them drive? Would you let them have access to the checkbook? Would you let them have credit cards, access to all the online accounts and everything else? No, you wouldn't. But here we are with a man who is clearly impaired. And for whatever reason, Jill Biden has perpetuated this. She had the power to stop this, but she didn't do it. Why? Well, you can say greed, lust for power, whatever. I don't care. Whatever the avarice, whatever the vice, whatever any of that was, this is what happens to us as caregivers. And make no mistakes, we're all susceptible to this. Now, not all of us are tempted in the level that she is with that kind of access to power and everything else, but it doesn't matter. We are still out of guilt, out of fear, out of greed, out of obligation. We still cover up. They covered up with Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden clearly has issues, and they covered that up. And don't think it's limited to the Democrat Party. It's everywhere. This week, we just celebrated Elvis's 90th birthday. Well, I don't know if you celebrated, but, you know, some people did. Elvis would have been 90 years old this week. And look at what Colonel Tom Parker did to him. Elvis was 42 years old when he died. And he kept pushing him to go out on stage and produce and perform. And he needed to be in a hospital. Somebody had a conversation around a table that said, "Joe Biden is impaired, but we are going to do this anyway because this is what it's going to take for us to be able to maintain the power we want to have for this country." And look at the damage that has been wrought because somebody didn't stand up to their own family member or within the family and say, "No, no, we're not going to do this. We're not going to allow this." This is nothing new. Anytime you have people in power, there's always somebody who wants to help perpetuate that so that they can get their meal ticket or the spotlight or whatever. But we have got to stand up and call this out. Now, you may disagree and you say, no, you know, Biden's fine. Well, not according to now the mainstream media. CNN's Van Jones, who is no fan of conservatives, the Republicans, or anybody else. I mean, he's a hardcore leftist, called out Chuck Schumer for deceiving the American people with this. So it's happening. And you see how tempting and how easy it happens, and you see the consequences. Now, maybe for, you know, just regular individuals like us, the consequences are not quite as dire, but there's still consequences. People get behind the wheel of a car that have no business doing so. People are, I got friends of mine who have had loved ones taken for tens of thousands of dollars over fraud that targets them specifically as aging parents with dementia. They get them confused and so forth. And you may have gotten some of those calls, of those phishing scam calls and everything else. It's so important for us to be vigilant, but it's not just vigilance. We also need to be courageous. We need to stand up and say, it's time to step off the stage. Look at what happened because one wife would not stand up for her husband and say, this is wrong. This is not appropriate. This is out of bounds and it has to stop. Where does that courage come from? Well, it comes from character. It comes from a conviction, and it comes from other people bracing them and bolstering them and giving them that extra bit of encouragement to do the right thing. Some of you may be in that situation right now where you've got to take the car keys away. Do not wait. We don't have to like it, but this is where we are. It takes courage to be a caregiver. It takes courage to do the right thing. It takes courage to stand up in the face of opposition. But we have a God who says, don't be afraid, be strong and of good courage. I'm with you. And that is hope for the caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. PeterRosenberger.com. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of all the unchristlike stuff out there today? Great. I am too. But let's talk about something else. let's talk about the good, Christ-affirming resources, educational material, and family entertainment available at the AFA Resource Center. From encouraging and conversation starter shirts and sweatshirts to good Christian books by your very own AFA staff. At the AFA Resource Center, you can even find Christian documentaries and lesson plans with DVDs like The God Who Speaks and materials from the AFA Cultural Institute. The Resource Center is a great place for materials for you, your friends, or your church. But really, if you're tired of unsubstantial, un-Christ-like stuff, you should check out the Resource Center. Find it at resources.afa.net. That's resources.afa.net. Don't settle for a distracted culture, but set your mind on things above.
The Word of God tells us many times in one form or another, fear not. Many people are very fearful about some of the many perils and dangerous happenings that are going on in the world. Psalm 91 verses 1 and 2 tell us, "He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress. My God, in Him I will trust." I'm Joseph Parker, and we here at the American Family Association would like to remind you, fear not, put your trust in the Lord. We'd like to both encourage and challenge you to aggressively put your faith to work. And one way to do that is to pray Psalm 91 daily for yourself and your family, and keep your trust in Him. If you'd like to get a copy of the Psalm 91 prayer for yourself, email us here at psalm91@afa.net. Again, that's psalm91@afa.net.
Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is the program for you as a caregiver, peterrosenberger.com. I got to sit down with a fascinating individual this week. Her name is Sue Ryan, and I'd like to introduce her to you. And you can hear a portion of the interview here. The whole interview is on the podcast and at my Substack page. You can just go to peterrosenberger.com for that, and you can hear the whole thing. But I wanted to play some snippets of it for you today. I think you'll find it fascinating. We are joined today with a wonderful author, speaker, business coach, and podcaster. She's got a lengthy resume, but right there, smack dab in the middle of her resume, is the word caregiver. Her name is Sue Ryan, and I'm very glad to have her with us today. She's got quite a story, quite a journey, and I'm looking forward to hearing her insights. So, Sue, welcome to the program.
Peter, thank you so very much for inviting me. I'm really glad to have the opportunity to share with you and with your audience.
We took a while to get here. You and I started talking some time ago, but life just has a way. And
life of caregivers has a way, doesn't it?
Blessed are the flexible, for they shall not be bent out of shape. So tell us a little bit about your story. First off, your background before caregiving and before all that came about, and then what happened in this journey and where you are today. So let's just kind of go back to the beginning here.
In the early part of my professional career, which started in my early 20s, I was in the enterprise application software industry, and that's where I stayed for over 30 years in a variety of different roles. Beginning in about my mid-20s was my first caregiving journey, and I was in a variety of family caregiving journeys in parallel to my professional career, all the way through my professional career, and I also never self-identified because, especially when I began, it was certainly not seen as something that you could share and still have a professional career. And I have had, as I mentioned, a number of journeys, including my husband, my dad, and my grandmother, to name a few. My dad was a frontotemporal lobe dementia, and his journey was about 8.5 years. And overlapping that by a couple years was my husband's, and his was just under 12 years. And my grandmother preceded both of them.
What was that like? You know, did you just get picked out of the family with your grandmother and get involved in this, or did you just step up? How did that evolve with you?
It was a blend of it. It was that I complemented the care. I wasn't the primary and full-time caregiver. I was a part of the care team with my grandmother. Her son was her primary caregiver. And because I had already been on so many family caregiving journeys before that, it made sense that my experience would help that journey. From the very first journey back in my 20s, I've always felt like when the journey was given to me, there was a purpose in it. There was a reason for it. So I never fought it. And I always felt that there was something for me in this, that part of the purpose in my life was the experiences of the journey, both for me, for where I was going, and then also for my ability to support my loved one having their best life journey. And so from that space, I just always embraced them. And that didn't mean that they weren't challenging. It didn't mean they weren't incredibly frustrating. It just meant that I never fought them and I never said, oh, why me? And I never felt like a martyr or anything like that. I felt that I had been blessed to be able to have the ability to support someone in a time when they needed support and learned a lot. And then that's why the number one reason why I began sharing, because I wanted other people to learn faster and more easily than I did. And I wanted them to gain experience through the professional side of my career in information technology. I used to say there's data, information, knowledge, and wisdom, and the world's got basically an infinite amount of data. And we get some curiosity, some interest in it, and we start asking questions and gathering information. And that's what we do when we begin our caregiving journey. And then we use it and we work with it. And all of these journeys helped me develop knowledge. And yet it's not wisdom until we share it. And I'm in the season and have been for probably the last 10 years of sharing what I've learned to help others, because I know what it was like not to have that in my early journeys and how much I benefited from it and others have benefited from it.
What brought you into the IT world? I mean, did that start in high school or because you were pretty young when you got into the caregiving world, but you were already into the IT world at that point. So when did that kick in for you?
When I was in college, I went to a college that had a degree in equestrian studies. I was fascinated with the science of numbers and I was going to have horses as an expensive hobby. I showed horses around the world and loved that. August 1st of my senior year in college, I got kicked in the knee by a horse and that rearranged my professional path. And with my fascination with the science of numbers, it was logical for me to get into information technology. And that has just been something I've always been curious about. So I've been a geek since I was in my mid-teens.
Well, you were doing all this while taking care of your grandmother. Then it changed into your dad and then your husband. But you've maintained all of these paths that you're doing. How did that work for you mentally to make that shift? Because one of the things I've learned in my years as a caregiver is that you've got to pivot at any given moment. Yes. And being geek, I share your geekiness and I share your nerdiness, but it things just don't always look very tidy like they do with when you're dealing with systems and numbers when you're dealing with a caregiver.
Right. They were not. My grandmother's journey was not until I was in my 40s. I had other people whose journeys were preceding that. And yeah, it was really tough because a big part of what I did on the technology side is I traveled. And it was very challenging to be a caregiver and also to have the responsibility for traveling and not to tell anybody else that you are a caregiver. So those parts of it weren't the easiest part of it. However, I began practicing something in the journey with my dad that I coined as massive acceptance and radical presence. And it simplified my journey. I was caring for my dad one evening and my dad, my hero, I mean, we went to all the horse shows together. He was always there for me. He was always saying, I'm going to teach you how to think. So when I'm not there for you, and I want to teach you how to stay safe. So, you can do it when I can't help you. And then here he is and he's needing the help. And I felt like one evening I had really underserved him because while I knew he had dementia, I was trying to get him to do something he'd been teaching me all my life. And from that came massive acceptance and radical presence. And what massive acceptance is that I recognized that I wasn't accepting exactly what was in the moment, exactly the way it was. I didn't have to like it. I didn't have to agree with it. I didn't have to understand it in the moment. I just had to accept this is what is and accept it without judgment of myself, of anyone else, or the situation. Because when I could accept, okay, this is what it is. then I could stay radically present in the moment, which meant I could meet my care receiver exactly where they are in the moment, not where some guide that says they should be in this place on the diagnosis, but where is my care receiver in this moment? What do they need in this moment so that I could celebrate when there was even the teeny tiniest beautiful moment, and there were tons of those, as well as when it was time to make a really, really challenging, life-altering decision, to be able to be present in that moment. And that's kind of what came out of all of it. And I feel like it has really supported me in my life, in all areas of my life now.
Was there something that triggered that moment for you to that massive acceptance? Because I've seen a lot of disconnect with fellow caregivers when they're really in the moment, but they're not accepting this. They're begrudging. They're showing up almost gritting their teeth. I'm in the moment. I'm dealing with it, but I'm not, there was not the acceptance part. What pushed you into saying it's important for me to accept this?
That's such a great question, Peter. Thank you for asking it, because part of it is that not being present in the moment. And another part of it is the judgment. And it is that we judge ourselves, or we judge our loved one, or we judge what's going on. And what it really was is, my dad and I were sitting out on the back porch, and it was dusk. And it was a beautiful dusk evening. We were looking out over, they were kind of up on a sloping hill, and there was the grass and all these nice things. All of a sudden, he jumps up and says, walk the dog. He had frontotemporal lobe dementia with aphasia, so it was hard for him to communicate. He grabs the dog's leash and starts walking toward the door of the porch. And on one end of the door to the porch, it goes out onto this sloping grassy hill. And we're in Florida. The grass is like razor blades. It's rough. It's all these other things. So I'm thinking, my dad, who's teaching me how to be safe, that's not the safest way, because the door at the other side of the porch walks out onto a paved concrete path that meanders down the hill. So I'm like, daddy, let's go this way. It's safer. He's walking that dog toward the door. And I said, no, daddy, let's go this way. This is the right way to do it. My father, who absolutely adored me, he would spank me if I did something wrong, but he would never lay a hand on me, if just in normal circumstances. My father pushed past me to walk out that door. And I was shocked for a moment. I was like, what? And then it's dusk. It's all these things. So I'm going next to him. I am like, okay, is he going to fall? Is the dog's agitated? He's agitated. I'm agitated. Are we going to make it down the hill? All of these things. So I am not fully present in the moment. Well, we get down to the bottom of the hill. And again, everybody's agitated. Everybody's frustrated. We are safe. But then, once you got a diagnosis and you get disrupted, it's so hard to get you back to a place of peace. So my dad is just completely discombobulated. He was frustrated and upset. And the rest of the evening was not pretty. And I reflected on it afterward. And I was like, what happened? What could I have done better in that moment? And what it really was is I'd accepted he had dementia. But I'm trying to get him to do what he had done. My whole life was teaching me about what's the safest thing to do. He didn't have access to that. And so me, instead of being so fully present and accepting that and opening the door for him and then helping, be able to grab the dog if it needed it or keep everything calm, I'm like trying on my agenda. And that changed it. And the minute that switch flipped, it has never gone back. And it has served me so well. And I had to make a life-changing choice for my husband, and I was able to stay fully present and calm in that moment.
I would imagine that switch being flipped also permeated into every part of your life, including all the business part of it, everything else, recognizing that massive acceptance, because I think this is one of the challenges I have faced personally, just going through this. Okay, if we could just get through this, then we can get on with our life. And there's a point where you say, no, this is our life and it's okay. I'm going to accept this and I'm going to be present in this life now. We're not looking for something to get us out. But how many people are in business? How many people do you see in their jobs or in their corporate structures who are just trying to get out of where they are as opposed to being where they are and growing in it? We're talking with author, speaker, business coach, and fellow caregiver, Sue Ryan. And we've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is Peter Rosenberger, peterrosenberger.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
The world around us is constantly challenging the way we think.
That's why we need a constant source of information that's based on the unchanging Word of God. I'm Jeff Shambley, and I invite you to join me for The Stand Radio, a weekly program that highlights the latest trends in culture, faith, and family. You'll hear insightful interviews with a biblical worldview application. The Stand Radio, Saturdays at 4 p.m. and Sundays at 8 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
This process of growing in Christ is a personal discipline. And I know that's a word we don't like, but you're not going to grow in Christ unless you determine that discipline is a part of it.
Join Dr. David Jeremiah for Advancing the Word of God on the next Turning Point Weekend Edition.
Listen to Turning Point Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
One of the unfortunate characteristics of life in the modern world is the high level of anxiety that so many people experience today.
With today's Dr. Dobson Minute, here's Dr. James Dobson.
Most of us have moments when we endure emotional discomfort of one kind or another. For many people, however, gripping fears and uneasiness are everyday companions. For those who find themselves in this situation, let me offer a couple of common sense suggestions that may help. First, we must take care of the physical body. Second, we should dig for insight. If we're bitter over a wrong, we must find a way to forgive. If we're afraid of our own anger or lust or greed, we must come to terms with our imperfection. Only when we've begun to clean up the powerful emotions that we've stored away in the toxic dump of our minds will we rid ourselves of their seepage into our daily lives.
For more information on this topic, visit drdobsonminute.org.
Welcome back. This is Peter Rosenberger. Glad to have you with us. PeterRosenberger.com. I'm continuing my conversation from this week with Sue Ryan. She's a phenomenal speaker, author, podcast host, and business coach, and fellow caregiver who brings quite a bit of insights to this. And I want to get back to a snippet of the conversation. If you want to hear the whole conversation, go out to my podcast or my Substack page. It's at both places at PeterRosenberger.com, PeterRosenberger.com, and you'll see it. And I like to bring the insights from other people that I find that are just fascinating people, and I think you'll find her. So let's get back to this interview. And I want to ask you this, because this is your world, this is your wheelhouse in the business world on this. I have maintained that caregivers, in many respects, are an employer's dream, because we are high-functioning multitaskers who use creative and adaptive solutions to very complex problems. And I've maintained that caregivers possess skill sets that they had even scratched the surface of understanding what they actually bring to the table. How does that resonate with you?
Absolutely, 100%. We're creative. There's no such thing as really multitasking, but we learn how to navigate a variety of different tasks. We learn how to maximize what we have. We're good at budgeting because we've got our budgets spread thin and we have a lot of responsibility
spread thin. Going on. Translucent.
Saying it nicely. Translucent. Yes, translucent. The other thing, Peter, that's really valuable is when a business is loyal to us and keeps us when they're in this temporary season called caregiving, we're phenomenally loyal to them as well. And we'll do everything we possibly can. We're so blessed with technology today that for many people, when they have a temporary season in their life in one way, shape, or form, you can also work. And our ability now to communicate with teams, the more and more we're able to do that, the better it is. So yes, I agree. I feel very strongly that caregivers are great team members and that they want to stay. You've got somebody who definitely does not want to leave the workforce.
No, they don't. And this is, I think the knee-jerk reaction that a lot of caregivers have had is, okay, I've got to take X amount of time off and throw myself recklessly at taking care of dad or mom or whatever. And then everything kind of falls apart. And I always tell people, just take a beat for a moment. Just breathe. When you hurl yourself at the beginning of this thing, so you run the risk. And for example, there's a lady I knew that she stopped everything to take care of her dad with Alzheimer's. She thought, okay, this is going to be just a short season. Well, 7 years later, she's bankrupt.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I'm screaming and raising my hands on. You've got to pace yourself. This is the long haul. Don't quit your job. Don't freak out. You didn't get here overnight. You're not going to get through it overnight. It's a matter of just pacing yourself. I want to go back to one other question, the setup for another one. When this thing happened with your husband, please feel free to not answer because I don't ever want to pry or expose anything, but that had to have been a gut punch. How did you deal with that?
It was a gut punch. However, my husband, this is going to get a little bit controversial for some people, and that's okay. It was a gut punch because it was certainly not what we anticipated. I didn't meet my husband till I was 46, never been in love, never been married. He was 12 years older than I am. It was just wonderful. And we had a great time for about 10 years and he was diagnosed. And so it was pretty shocking news because it was certainly something that, you know, neither one of us had been giving any consideration to. However, my husband was a mass everyday Catholic while he was still in the womb. He didn't fear death. He didn't see death as the end of life. He said, I fully accept this journey. He had questions he wanted to ask God and Jesus. He wanted to have an intellectual conversation with the Apostle Paul. And we journeyed together and I embraced that. And it was that we maximized, we didn't bemoan what we didn't have. What we said is, what do we have access to? How do we maximize our experience? And how do we make it the most positive experience for both of us? So the lens that I looked at through my journey with my husband is, how am I the best steward of his remaining time to help him be in the best place? So when we celebrate his birthday back into heaven, he's ready to go. He's at peace. He has done what God wanted him to. And I have supported him and done everything I can for him to have the best possible journey. And also not lost sight of the fact that it's my journey as well. Because I'm learning things. I'm going through things. I'm being challenged. I am having all kinds of experiences. And I would not be having those if there wasn't some purpose for those in my life. And so I completely accepted this is where massive acceptance and radical presence comes from. It's that, okay, this is what it is.
Do you feel that when you go out and speak on these things now, I mean, you're certainly very open now about your caregiving thing as opposed to, you know, 20 years ago or whatever. Do you feel like the audience is able to see their life now in the context of these stories that you're telling, that they're able to say, oh, I see the life principle here? I've maintained this for years, that there's nothing I deal with as a caregiver that's not part of the human condition. I just deal with it kind of on a nuclear level. I deal with it every day, all day long. But still, there's nothing Gracie and I deal with as husband and wife that's not common to everybody that's in a marriage as far as the emotional stuff. I mean, sure, most people don't have, you know, 80-something surgeries, but at the same time, somebody's going to get sick during the marriage. Somebody's going to have a bad day. Somebody's going to get into an argument. Somebody's going to deal with this. And the principles that we've learned through this that sustain us in this are pretty much universal. Is your audience recognizing that now with you?
I do it intentionally that way. I can talk about the lessons I've learned and never talk about caregiving. There are lessons I learned as a business professional in my life that I brought into caregiving that I felt like I had to go through something brutal in my business career. And it's, I just love this because in the moment of an experience, we can't possibly know if it's ultimately good or ultimately bad. There were several experiences I had in my professional career that nobody should have to go through. And yet the lessons I got from that supported me being a better family caregiver. So when I share the stories that I share them from a place of, what else is possible? What is there here for us to learn from it? I don't see things as a victim. I see things as someone who has experiences, and there's a purpose for absolutely everything. And I appreciate the opportunity to have had so many experiences because now I have such a wide variety of stories. And I feel really connected to the fact that I wouldn't be a passionate communicator. I wouldn't have had the experiences I had in the area that I had in business, which is working with high-level executives and communicating with them day in and day out, if these caregiving journeys weren't meant to help them see the value in embracing family caregivers in business. And back to your other question, how that will help them. So yes, they kind of go all full circle, Peter.
This is what I've found in my life. And I'm glad to be able to kind of have this informal, you know, test the wind here. Is this what other people who've been doing this, who are seasoned at this? It's one thing to start off and do this for a year or two, but when you've put in the kind of time that you and I have, you see a different perspective. I love quotes. I love to find quotes everywhere. And I try to remember as many as I can, and I write down the ones that I can't. So I'm going to throw out a quote to you. You probably have heard it, but it's one of the more profound quotes that I've ever heard. And it was by Alexander Solzhenitsyn when he said, "Bless you, prison, for the change you made in my life. For there upon that rotting prison straw, I learned the goal of existence is not prosperity, but the maturity of the human soul." And he wrote that after being 27 years in the Soviet prison. I'm sure you've heard that quote before, but when you hear that and the context of what you and I have dealt with and continue to deal with as a caregiver, what are your thoughts on that?
You've got him and I've got the Viktor Frankl quotes.
Oh, I love Viktor Frankl's too. That was a big moment for me when I read his book as well.
Yes, Man's Search for Meaning and several of the quotes. And what I think, whether it's a Viktor Frankl about when we're not able to change a situation, we're challenged to change ourselves, or an Alexander Solzhenitsyn. From my lens, it is that I see myself as someone planned my life before I began it. And I am here to live the experiences of my life, to get the most out of every experience I have in this life, and to try to do with it what I was brought here for. And a lot of that means that I don't judge, like, why did this have to happen to me? I don't ever say that. It's like, when I was in my 20s, I definitely did. It's like, really? And we become a little, you know, we become a little bit wiser. And now I see it, you know, okay, here's this experience and these things are coming through me. And so it's that I'm in this situation. There's a purpose in this situation for life. There's a lesson in it for me. There are lessons in it for others. Perhaps the way that I'm experiencing it is the lesson for someone else. And then there are other times where there's an experience and there's somebody else's experience is a lesson for me. And so I look at it from all of those things. And what it doesn't do, and I don't want to diminish how challenging being a caregiver can be. There are a lot, the range of emotions are there, the amount of responsibilities, there's so much always going on. However, when we recognize, and I've watched people who fought it, the entire time they were as a caregiver, they kept fighting it and judging it. And oh, why me? And this isn't fair. And I don't get to do all these things. And that is so their choice. And yet I could feel the challenges in their energy. And that really also went forward to their care receiver. As a caregiver, when I look at the words care and giving, what kind of care? How do I define care in this moment? And when I'm giving, what am I giving? Am I giving physical care to try to help them have a drink, to change them, to calm them? Or am I giving them peace of mind? Am I bringing my energy to help them, you know, to help them where they're at? So I'm always trying to stay really cognizant of that. And I bring that into the rest of my life now. I do a lot of coaching. And coaching is connecting people to the greatest potential they have. And part of that is helping them eliminate things that don't support them. And as a caregiver, there could be so many things that don't support us. So how do we get rid of those things so that the best potential we have for being a caregiver, for you, for example, with Gracie, all the different things that come up, you could be judging those, and yet you don't.
Yes, I would never. I won't say that I have it. I just say that I'm moving away from it.
You're moving away from it because you've recognized judging it is not going to move me forward.
Now, and again, I go back to what you said, acceptance has been a big word for me for some time. That this is my life. It's not a bad life. It's a hard life. Her life is immeasurably harder than mine, but it's not a bad life. And somebody asked me one time, would you do it all over again? Reality's hard enough for me. I'm not going to deal with hypothetical. But that said, I love the way I play the piano now. I love the way I write. I love the way I'm able to engage with people and interact and see beauty. Back to Viktor Frankl's, but when he saw that flower out there in the midst of the concentration camp, I see things that I would normally miss. Yeah. And my life is richer because of this. I don't particularly enjoy the journey that got me here. Gracie and I both detest certain parts of our life that we've had to do. But I realize there is such a depth to the beauty of this world and the purpose that God has laid upon both of us in this that I'm just awestruck by it. But it's taken me a lifetime to understand that. We've been talking with Sue Ryan, and you can go see more about her at SueRyan.Solutions, SueRyan.Solutions. And if you want to hear the whole interview, I put the whole thing unedited on my podcast, and my Substack page, both of which are easily accessible at peterrosenberger.com. And I hope you'll take advantage of that. We got more to go. We'll be right back. I'll never forget walking into the hospital room after Gracie had her second amputation. Both legs are gone now. And she looked at me. She said, "I know what I'm going to do." And I was kind of startled. I said, "Well, what are you going to do?" She said, "I'm going to help provide prosthetic limbs to my fellow amputees and tell them about Jesus." And I said, "Well, baby, can we get out of the hospital first?" But she never let it go. And for almost 20 years, we've been working out of Ghana, West Africa. We treat patients all over there from other countries that come there. We send supplies. We send teams. We sponsor patients. We work with a prison where inmates volunteer to disassemble used prosthetic limbs so we can recycle the parts. All of this because Gracie trusted God with her heartache. We've got a huge shipment of supplies that is being loaded up right now to go out soon. Would you help us do it? StandingWithHope.com/giving. StandingWithHope.com/giving. There's prosthetic feet, knees, pylons, sleeves, adapters, all kinds of connectors. All of these things we are sending over there so that people can walk. We're going to point them to Christ. Help us out. StandingWithHope.com/giving.
Your Caregiver Minute with Peter Rosenberger.
I reserve the right to my own counsel. Let me give you some context to this. There is a season in caregiving where everybody's telling you what you need to do and what you're supposed to do. If that's where you are, if you've got people that are just wearing out to your last good nerve, first off, I'd like for you to put some space between them. I want you to reason these things out. Go back to Scripture. God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and love and what? A sound mind. The question is, do we use our mind? Or are we just governed by our feelings and our embarrassment or our shame? And if there's one thing I want you as my fellow caregiver to unleash in your life, is the power in your mind that God gave you to reason things out, to learn to set good boundaries, and to use logic and think it out. This is really critical in our journey as caregivers so that we're not buffeted around by stuff. I reserve the right to my own counsel.
This has been your Caregiver Minute with Peter Rosenberger. Learn more at hopeforthecaregiver.com.
Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger, and that is the theme song for this program, written by myself and Chris Latham. And Jeff King, wonderful session player in Nashville, redid the track for me. We did an updated version of it, a little more bluesy rock. He threw in some great runs on his guitar. He's a great guitar player. His wife, Tammy, is an amazing fiddle player. And she actually played, I believe, on Gracie's senior vocal recital way back in 1986. And Gracie finished her senior vocal recital with she had to do a junior vocal recital that was a little bit more traditional, and then her senior one was a little bit more commercial. And we had a big band, like 17-piece band at one point. She closed with Kenny Loggins' Heart to Heart and just blistered it. But she did a bunch of different songs, and I wrote out all the parts, the orchestration for it. Tammy was playing violin with a couple other folks. Gracie was pregnant. It was November of 1987, and to my knowledge, Gracie remains the only student at Belmont University to do her senior vocal recital and admit that she was pregnant. I'm not saying that there haven't been others, but Gracie admitted it, and she was carrying our oldest son, Parker, when she did this, and she nailed it. And this guy that you just heard on the guitar, his wife, Tammy, now they weren't married at the time. She was playing on that recital as well. It was just a great time. And I've got the video of that somewhere around. I was talking to our youngest son, Grayson, about that. And they did not get to see their mom in that regards because, you know, that was a long time ago. And she could get out there and throw down. I mean, and we're going to get her back to that. We're going to get through this surgery. By the way, I hope you enjoyed that interview, the snippet that we just had. And please take advantage of that and go out and listen to that at the full interview at my Substack page. And you can see it right there at the website, peterrosenberger.com. It says Peter's Substack page or the podcast, either way. And I would hope you'll take advantage of all that. I'm going to have some more interviews. I got lots more people that we're going to be talking to, and I think you'll enjoy them. I enjoy just getting to know people and learn about them, and I'll play clips from those interviews here on this program. It's a little hard to do the long-form conversation that I do with the podcast on this program here in American Family because it's, you know, you have to block it different ways for the clock and go to the breaks and things like that. But if you'll indulge me, we're going to work on that. And producer Pat, who is at the helm of this show, says that she can make that happen and she could work with me on it. So thank you for that, Pat. And but back to Gracie's performance, we're going to get her through this surgery. And I've got it mapped out for her to sing a bunch of new songs over the next several months, even actually through this year. I'm so excited about this. I really believe she's going to come through this surgery stronger and better, and she's going to be straighter. She's going to get her posture back so that she can really start singing and belting it. And I want our sons to hear her sing like that again. I mean, they may not remember a lot of it, but I want them to hear that. I want you to hear it. I want to hear it. I want Gracie to hear it. And she's got a song, it's kind of a rock blues song that you're going to really love, that Gary Chapman wrote for her. Gary has written some of the some iconic songs that are part of our musical DNA here in the Christian music, but also some secular ones. In fact, I'm going to have an interview with the guy that took one of Gary's songs to number one back in 1981, T.G. Shepherd. I'm going to be sitting down with him and talking here in the next couple of weeks, and you'll be able to hear that interview. But I told Gary what I was looking for Gracie, and he said, I know it. And in fact, he didn't even bother to say goodbye. He said, I know it. I'm going to go right now. And he just hung up. and then he called me back, and he sent me a text with this song. He said, all right, what do you think of this? And it's wonderful. I mean, it's perfect for Gracie. It's got all the things, the components of it that we really wanted to do. And we're going to get her through this surgery. And I talked to her prosthetist of many years in Nashville, who made her first legs and has been over to Africa with us through our work with Standing with Hope. In fact, he's still our senior prosthetic advisor for all that we do with the prosthetic limb outreach that Gracie started. And I asked him, I said, look, after these two surgeries, would you mind if I flew you out to Denver, would you come out and just evaluate her? I'll put you up in a hotel, and before we send her home from Denver to Montana, I'd like to see if everything is kosher the way you think it needs to be with her alignment and everything else. And he'd be happy to. He's an amputee himself, and he's been a prosthetist for well over 50 years, and he is just amazing. He really understands the mechanics of prosthetic limbs, and he understands Gracie's alignment issues, which are severe, because Gracie is not, she got so banged up in her wreck that you can't just align her like a normal person. Like, for example, let me explain this. What's the number one cause of amputation worldwide? Well, it's diabetes. When you have a diabetic limb, the limb has become infected, gangrenous. It needs to be removed. But there's no alignment abnormalities. But Gracie had so much trauma that the alignment to get her hips and her legs, femurs, and all that kind of stuff all aligned is a real challenge. And you have to spend a lot of time with her. You have to think way outside of the box. And she's been very blessed to have great prosthetists. Notably, Jim has been her main prosthetist for the bulk of this. She has another one that we got to know out here, and he used to be in Montana, but he's moved to Idaho. And his name is Scott. He's a great guy. And he wants to go to Ghana with us, and I'm planning on taking him. In fact, this year I'm hoping, once we get Gracie through this and kind of get her stable, then I'm hoping I can take a return trip. Gracie said, well, she wants to go. And I'm like, baby, let's just get you walking first. So let's slow down there, darling. But we're going to get Jim to come out and look at her before we send her home from Montana. And that'll be a huge thing. It may not sound like a big deal, but it really is to have his eyeballs on her so that she is aligned as absolutely best as possible with this new surgery that's going to straighten her up. And they're gonna cut her hip flexors and move them down on her hip bone, on her pelvic bone, and so that it'll allow her to straighten back up. They're so tight that she can't stand up straight. Her back is fixed now. We've had these big surgeries to fix her back, and so that she's got the curvature and everything she needs, but she can't straighten up because her hip flexors won't straighten. She's been bent over for so long, they've just gotten so hard that you can't even physical therapy out. You know, I mean, work them out and that kind of stuff. And so they're going to have to surgically fix this problem. And Jim's been advocating for this for years for her, but we had to fix the back first. And he feels like she's going to be, in 3 months after this, dramatically different. How about that? Don't you think she's due for some good news? And so part of that is I'm going ahead right now and getting a lot of the songs in place so that when she gets through this, she's going to be able to sing. And we're going to have these songs that we're ready to release. It's going to really get her back into what she does best, which is to get out there and absolutely nail it musically. She is so good, and I want that voice out there. So anyway, I kind of rambled on that, but I'm looking forward to Jim coming out, and I'm looking forward to hopefully getting to Ghana this year to do more with our prosthetic limb outreach. It's been a while since I've been there. COVID and then Gracie's health has prevented me from going. I talk with them every week. We work with them. We sponsor patients. And you could see all of those patients. In fact, would you go out to standingwithhope.com and look at the prosthetic ministry, prosthetic limb ministry, and see the faces of the lives that are being changed right now. I mean, not 10 years ago. We've been doing this for 20 years, but this is our 20th year anniversary of our first trip over there. But just look at the lives and look at what happened because Gracie was willing to trust God with these terrible things. And we would invite you to help us do more. It's an extraordinary work. And we have the two outreaches. We have the Family Caregiver Outreach, which you're listening to right now. And we have the Prosthetic Limb Outreach. It's for the wounded and those who care for them. Some years ago, 13 years ago, 14 years ago now, we partnered with Core Civic over in Nashville. They run correctional facilities all over the country, and they have a lot of faith-based programs. And we were able to work with them so that inmates volunteer to help us disassemble the used limbs that we collect from all over the country. And they go there and they disassemble, they put them all the parts in boxes, and then we ship them over to West Africa where they can use these to build brand new legs. Now, we have to buy things like acrylic resin, carbon fiber, and things such as that. And we could use your help with that. And it's not too late to get our caregiver calendar. We're probably going to stop offering it after, you know, February, because, you know, you've already missed 2 months. But if you still want it, we got some. And if you want to sponsor us monthly, we'll send you one. We also have the tumblers. And I'm looking at other things I'm going to develop that's just kind of unique to us to say thank you for what you do to help make this possible. If you like the show, and if you like what we're doing, and if you want to be a part of it, this is the time. And to start off the year and you know, you can see what we do. It's right there. It is. We don't have this huge staff. We don't have this massive overhead. It's just me and Gracie. And that's it. I mean, it's a mom and pop. And right now it's mostly pop, but we're hoping mom could get back to it. And we want to get her back to doing the extraordinary things that she's done. She's told me she wants to go snowmobiling. And I'm like, baby, please, can we get through the surgery first? I fully expect, and I'll post them when she does, that she'll be out on ATVs this summer and riding around. Wouldn't you like to see that? I know I would. I know she would. And we want to get her back over to Ghana. I can't tell you what it means to the people that see her, the patients that we treat, when she comes into the room and their faces just light up. And I remember one time they said, you know, she's just like us. We're going to leave that in God's hands. Right now, I'm going to get her to Denver, and we're going to trust the Lord to get her through this surgery, get her strong, get her going. And if your heart is touched by what we do, we invite you to be a part of it. StandingWithHope.com/giving. StandingWithHope.com/giving. While you're out there, sign up for our e-letter. It's a free e-letter. Goes out once a month, and you'll get updates on Gracie's new blog that she's been doing, on the music we've got going, my stuff, the patient of the month that we're treating, all kinds of things. So take advantage of it. This is Peter Rosenberger. We'll see you next time.
Peter Rosenberger. He's not a preacher.
He's America's caregiver.